Hello there. This is the Science in Real Life podcast, bringing you the inside scoop of the reality of STEM careers from candid conversations with individuals in the field. I'm your host, Nyasita Undari. A little bit about myself. I'm a bioinformatician with a background in medical biochemistry, and more of my story can be found on Season 1, Episode 10 of this podcast, which you can listen to after this. Let's get right into today's episode. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Science in Real Life podcast. Today I am joined by someone I met at the Deep Learning in Durba that just took place between the 3rd and 9th of September in Accra. And I'm very grateful for that platform for allowing me to network and connect with many people within Africa and of course the entire world at large. Muyanga, would you like to introduce yourself and, you know, just tell our audience who you are before we get into the nitty-gritties of the conversation?
Thank you so much, Laura. My name is Muyanga Kampekete, and I'm a biomedical engineer. I'm a biomedical engineering technologist, and I'm from Zambia.
Yeah, fun fact. Muyanga is the first Zambian we have on the podcast and also one of the few males that we've highlighted their stories on the podcast. We want more men to also come on it, but women are also sharing their science journeys. So Muyanga, do you mind taking us to when you initially realized that you loved science? Take us to the very beginning.
Okay. I think I've loved science from childhood, but I wasn't that the person who would get into science. Growing up, I came to enjoy art. And later on in life, when I got to college, I got introduced to science. But science has not like been the thing that I go into doing. It has sort of been the thing that I've been introduced to based on what I've learned in the field of art.
Okay, that's very interesting. Most of the guests we've had on the podcast sort of knew they wanted to do science, but I feel like I was also the same. I got introduced to science in my not introduced per se. Like, I got to learn that I love it in my undergrad. But whilst I was young, like in secondary school and primary school, I was also like, okay, it's fun, it's cool, I excel at it. So, I mean, I didn't think much of it, but okay. That's interesting. How would you explain what a biomedical engineer does?
I think I would explain it in this way. You've got the medical field that is facing a number of challenges, a number of problems. And we believe that medicine is all about doctors, you see? But in the actual sense, medicine is really not so much about doctors. In fact, it's not everything with medicine that has to do with doctors. Okay. So the doctors would need to, say, treat a patient, but they'll be lacking in certain, tools, equipment. So that's where we come in as biomedical engineers. So using the experience that we've acquired from the engineering field, we try and relate that to solutions that can better healthcare.
Ah, okay. So in this case, we can say you're a medic, an engineer, and a scientist at the same time.
Something like that.
Oh, exciting. That's really nice. I think that illuminates because most people think the medicine field, as you've said, is only about doctors and prescriptions and anatomy and all those things. But it's good to hear that there's usually some background work that goes into the medical field before it gets to the forefront, which is the doctors. All right. Is there anything in particular that led you to the biomedical field when now you were getting to undergrad? Because you said art brought you there, but is there anything that you thought, ah, this is exciting, maybe this is why I would want to do this?
So when I completed college, I mean, when I completed secondary education, I never wanted to do anything that is engineering related. My focus mainly was to do some business course and then later find myself doing some sort of artistic work. That's drawing, sculpting, and all those things. But because of my mom really forced me to get into the field. You see, in Africa, and I believe this is the case even in your country, in Kenya, parents will be so focused on forcing their children to pursue a career that they believe will bring some food, to put some food on the table at the end of the day. So, like in my case, that was more or less the story. My mom forced me to do biomedical engineering because she believed that someday I would get a job and I provide for my family. And the interest was really not there in the beginning. It sort of started to grow when I stayed for like a year in college. Yes.
Would you say it's a blessing or a curse at this point?
Yes, so it was a blessing that mom forced me to go for the fields.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I think it's the same here in Kenya, but I would say there's now a shift into people going into like creative industries. But I do get when you say that I mean, parents, most African parents anyway, would want you to be an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer. Very rarely would they want you to be a film director, actress, actor, or things like those, or an artist. But I think in our country, what we're starting to see, not the very traditional parents, they're those ones who are very traditional. Like, what do you mean you're going to study art in school? Like, that's what you do as a hobby to make, you know, extra money on the side, but that's not what you choose as a mainstream career. But anyway, I don't know. We are starting to see that shift. I don't know how much longer it will last. Although what I see in our country is that the creative economy is picking up. So maybe parents might start to be like, yes, please go and do.
Go for it.
Yeah, go for it. So, you know, you also make whatever okay, right now the world being very capitalistic in nature, people just want to be in a career that just makes money regardless. Right now I don't think people are looking a lot at reputation and all those things, but maybe I could be wrong. Yeah, but it's nice to see that relatability between different African countries, and even this I think has been reiterated by different guests that have been on the podcast. So one of the applications I saw from you when we were at the deep learning in Durban was the digital stethoscope that you had developed, and it had some aspects of AI. Do you want to just give a sneak peek of that to our audience so that they probably get a feel of what the biomedical engineering field can achieve in a practical sense?
Okay. So it all began back in 2020. By then I was still a student.
Mm-hmm.
It was that time when COVID was really out there to, you know, it put us through a lot during that time.
Yeah.
And so we sat down, myself and some team members, we sat down to try and find a solution to a problem that we identified in most healthcare facilities here in our country. So this problem was that, you see, there is that limitation or measure as, I don't know if I would call it a restriction.
Okay.
Yes, something like that. So there was that restriction that would say doctors are not supposed to be as close as less than 1 meter from the patient.
Yeah.
Proximity. proximity restriction. So we looked at that and tried to figure out a way of how would come up with a solution that would allow doctors to diagnose and treat their patients while keeping that strict measure in place. So one tool that we identified was the stethoscope. You see, this tool is like that thing the doctor usually walks around. That
you, it's actually the idea that, of the doctor.
Yes, that's yeah. the idea of the doctor.
Yeah.
So we looked at that and thought, well, this device has got a very short length, if I may call it that. And whenever the doctor wants to carry out a diagnosis on the patient, that doctor has to be as close as possible to the patient. And that violates the measures that have been, one of the measures that have been put in place to prevent the spread of COVID-19. So we looked at the stethoscope and thought, why can't we build something that can allow the doctor to be less proximal from the patient? So we thought, okay, we'll maintain the idea of having a stethoscope, but we'll try to make that stethoscope wireless. So from everything just started building from there. All the other things about AI, the use of AI in conducting diagnosis just began to form right after we had come up with the initial plan for the solution that we thought of. Everything else started to build after we had come up with mm-hmm. the initial plan of building a wireless device that could allow the doctor to be less proximal from the patient. So the aspect of AI only came in later when we realized that actually using this device does not allow a medical personnel to conduct accurate diagnosis on the patient, because you know there are quite a number of factors that come into play. You'd find factors like environmental noise. So that is, if a doctor is carrying out a diagnosis on a patient using this stethoscope, there will be too much noise in that environment such that all that noise will overlap with the noise of that particular sound that the doctor is interested in. So all of that does not allow the doctor to carry out effective diagnosis. Another issue that we got to identify was the fact that, well, everyone goes through some form of stress or the other, you know, and because of this, you would find that person would be at work whilst having some form of psychological noise. So other than the environmental noise that the doctor would encounter, there would be that psychological noise that would be in the doctor's head. And that may not allow the doctor to carry out effective diagnosis. So based on these two issues, we now were able to identify the use of AI in our system or solution. So that's how everything now came to form the AI-enabled digital stethoscope.
I remember coming to your poster at ELA, and I was truly very impressed by how it worked. But maybe something I'm just curious about before I even delve maybe deeper into other things that I may like to ask. But okay, besides the proximity, I understand that that's something that the AI digital stethoscope was coming to fill like that gap. I have used the stethoscope before, and it's so loud. Like when you put it on someone's chest and you put the earphones, for lack of a better, I don't know what those things go into the ear cord.
The earpieces are called.
Okay. The earpieces. It usually feels so loud that in my opinion, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I usually feel like you will not hear anything else but that sound of the heartbeat. So one of the things that you said is that there was sometimes environmental noise would be a factor when it comes to diagnosis. Of course, I think I understand the psychological part where the doctor can be, you know, thinking about other things and maybe miss something. But this environmental one, maybe if, do you like mind expounding just a bit for me? Maybe the audience is not interested, but for me, I'm interested in knowing. Yeah.
So environmental noise will you may carry out a diagnosis using a stethoscope on a patient, but you definitely get the sound when using the traditional stethoscope. But that sound you get is not really the heart sound. Remember, your body is this housing of cavities. It has got this space inside it, and in those spaces there are different organs that move at different frequencies, that based on that they'll produce this vibration or sound. So all of that sound can overlap with the heart sound. So that is what can be referred to as environmental noise. So it's not only the external environment, the environment external to the patient, but that which is internal to the patient, the homeostatic environment, if you may call it that. So the noise from these two environments is what is going to lead to environmental noise.
Okay, I get that. So it means the environment maybe around the heart, inside the body of the patient. Ah, okay, nice. Sure. All right.
What we really are focused on in building the hardware device, because the solution that we have implemented is sort of two parts. So there's the software where you've got all these modules doing their binary classification of the sound. And you also have got the hardware, which is now responsible, acting like an advanced stethoscope. So the hardware that allows you to connect that heart sound that you are interested in. But we are taking into consideration all that noise that may morph from these sounds. So we've put in measures that are able to denoise or remove that noise that is of no use to the doctor, that may affect the interpretation of the sound. So we've employed various engineering measures, measures to do with signal processing. So the device will be able to pick out this sound and try to remove all the other environmental noises based on the pitch or the frequency, because all these devices, all these organs in the body will be moving at different frequencies. So the device is now able to pick out this sound and remove all the other frequencies to just maintain that frequency range of the heart sound. And by so doing, we are able to clean or get rid of that environmental noise that may interfere with the proper interpretation of the heart sound.
As I said, yes, I was impressed when I heard about the work. Just an ignorant question. Is there a stethoscope used for any other applications apart from just listening to the heartbeat and maybe making diagnosis with that? Could I use it to listen to something else?
Yes, it is possible to use it to listen to something else, but that is not to say it is purposefully meant to listen to everything else. Yeah, but clinical use of the stethoscope is based on interpretation of heart sounds and the lung sounds, unless there could be any other organ that has or in some way developed that you would need the stethoscope for diagnosis, you know. But clinical use of the stethoscope is only on the two, on the heart sounds and the lung sounds.
Wow.
Yeah, and based on this, the medical personnel was able to determine as to whether this patient has got a cardiovascular or sort of has got a pulmonary disease or COVID-19 or pneumonia. So basically, that's how you'd use the stethoscope on a patient.
This is why I truly love this part. I would not have known that. I didn't even know it was known for lungs. I get to learn. I get to learn something new all the time. I have guests on here, and that's really nice. Is the device used? Okay, have you done any collaborations, maybe with some doctors, some hospitals, and maybe is there any timeline you see it actually being used in this real world applications apart from just research?
Sure. So when we came up with this idea, there was an opportunity for funding So we identified that opportunity and applied for funding. So later on, I think 6 months or so later, the idea was NSTC, that's the National Science and Technology Council of my country, they bought into that idea and they were ready to fund it. So it went on, they funded the idea. And as I'm speaking right now, it's a research that we are doing at the college for 3 years. We've already done 2 years, so only about a year remaining. And we will reserve this remainder of the 3 years into data set collection, which we haven't done yet. So we intend to do that later. We also intend to optimize the design of the device, and well, many other things will come into play. We were hoping in 3 to 4 years, we can be able to get validation for the device. And it will eventually, probably, the device may be applied in the real healthcare setup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, then there's only one challenge that I feel like Africa has been facing for a very long time. And this challenge really has to do with regulation and standardization of all these medical devices. I'm not aware of any African country that is at the moment producing medical devices. As at the moment, we either donate or we just buy using our own resources outside the continent of Africa. So I feel like there are no proper establishments that have been built to standardize the equipment that Africa would want to build for its people. At the moment, you need to come up with an idea, develop some sort of prototype, and then apply to organizations like the World Health Organization or the Food and Drug Administration, so that your device can get the approval it needs for it to be applied in the African healthcare setup. So that's the challenge that I feel may impede us from getting the device on the market soon enough.
Well, yeah, that's truly profound. Yeah, most people do collaborate with people outside so that, you know, maybe to accelerate the process of getting these devices into the market. And I think you read my mind there, because the next thing I was going to ask is, oh, it seems like you have a lot of fun building things that, you know, are solving challenges that, okay, actual real world challenges that people may face. And it's a good application of the kind of education that we get doing real world, creating real world solutions. Are there any other challenges that someone who's pursuing a biomedical engineering career in Africa may face, apart from that one of maybe if they develop something, it might take a long time because of the lack of standardization processes? Is there anything that they should be aware of coming into the field?
Well, it all depends on the field that you want to specialize in. Biomedical engineering is this broad umbrella of subfields. So you have things like nanotechnology, clinical engineering. At the moment, just so you know, I'm trained as a clinical engineer. So after my training, after graduation, I'm supposed to go into the healthcare facility or hospital to provide my services there. I'm not allowed to do research, though it's being done unofficially, but my field of training does not allow me to do research. There are other fields that are intended for that. Biomedical engineering, like I said, is really broad. There are different fields under biomedical engineering. So it all depends on what that person would want to do. But in the African healthcare setup, I think it's right to say that we don't have as many establishments that support the growth of biomedical engineering as a broad field. So you'd find one getting a training, say, abroad, and come here only to find that their services are obsolete. They cannot apply them in the context of in the African context, if I may say. So they are only able to apply the skills that they have learned in college or university when they do their work outside the continent.
Yeah, I also think governments, I don't even know who's responsible, but whoever is responsible, I think that there should be more opportunities for people who do these careers that can actually change the life of common citizens in their countries. But yeah, it's profound, and I think many people would want to, you know, get into that field. So I'm assuming building the stethoscope would be one of your most proud career moments, or is there any other?
I would say the stethoscope has been like one impactful moment in my career. Working on research has really opened me up for more opportunities. But all this would not have been possible without the idea of the stethoscope. Everything that has gone in this aspect so far would not have been possible without the stethoscope.
Yeah, and also we would not have met, so that, you know, we showcase this career journey.
Definitely.
The podcasts. That's amazing. So as you're navigating your career now, and I don't know, maybe you would be going for higher education or are already doing higher education at this moment, are there some role models and mentors in the scientific community that have influenced your career journey? And in case anyone is doing that course and would be listening to the podcast, do you mind sharing with them so that maybe they can check them out?
Definitely there are, but they're not as infamous as you want them to be. So when I just started college, I met this lecturer. By then he was referred to as Mr. Francis Chikweto. And it is him that has really played a major role in making me the person that I am today. There's also another of my former lecturers who is now a workmate. We are working together at the same college. And that is Mr. Konix Karupa. So two of these trained in two different fields. Mr. Francis Chikweto is now a doctor. Based in Japan, got his training in biomedical engineering. He still went on to get his doctorate degree in the same field of biomedical engineering. But we also have Konix Karupa, who is a master in mechanical engineering. So these two really have really played a major role in making the person that I am today.
Yeah. The reason, and very nice to them, applause for holding your hand throughout this journey. The reason I had to ask about mentors and mentorship is because I've had many informal conversations with people in STEM, and most of them say they drop out because of lack of mentorship, because of lack of role models. They do not see someone, they can look up to model their careers after. Or even if they know someone, that person is too far such that they're not relatable to their careers. So the way you've said, and you've mentioned your lecturers, you've mentioned people that are in close proximity to you, that's just to showcase that you can find mentorship in your environment. And yeah, if you get the infamous ones, as you said, the better, I guess.
The statement you just gave comes with some reservations, you know.
Uh-huh.
You will be able to find mentors, but these mentors need to have some form of upper hand view on whatever field you are interested in.
Yeah.
So mentors like Dr. Chikweto, he just received this training in Russia, then came to the college to lecture. So it was because of what he had learnt out there.
Mm-hmm.
That I was able to sort of get attracted to him. based on his knowledge, because the knowledge was not acquired locally. And I feel like that is one of the challenges that we face in the African education setup.
Mm-hmm.
Without advanced materials, it becomes very difficult for especially engineering courses to be implemented or to be managed. So that's really the challenge that we have in Africa. And given such a situation, it would really become difficult for a student who seeks a mentor to get impactful outcomes at the end of the day. You would still need to have access or to have some ideas about what is really trending in the engineering field for you to be motivated to do even bigger things in your own local setup. I know there are some platforms like YouTube. It allows you to explore the world, but what's the use of exploring the world when your own environment does not allow you to apply the things that you have learned from your exploration? So that's where all these difficulties come in. And you know, I would say I was lucky to have met these two people in my life, because they allowed me to have a sort of more practically inclined view of how advanced engineering systems work. And so based on that, I got to have this motivation, this energy to keep on pushing further and see how I can play my part in ensuring that our society moves further.
I actually like the disclaimer you've attached there. Do you have any pointers for, just in your opinion anyway, do you have any pointers for someone looking for mentors, let's say in the biomedical engineering, and they're in an institution, an African one? So besides just, okay, I don't know, maybe sometimes they can find lecturers who trained outside, who have advanced knowledge that can help, but are there any other probably maybe specific pointers that they could look for? And what is beneficial for someone in a career like yours that I think might be very dynamic, because the challenges that we face are changing every day. Maybe if you had the idea of this, maybe the stethoscope that you're building now, maybe if you had it in 2080, maybe it will not apply because we need it now. So how can they be able to maybe identify this kind of mentors and mentorship that will be beneficial for their careers?
I think I may not have an absolute answer to that.
Yeah, it's fine.
I would say my life through school has been very natural. And over time, I just found myself inclined to always wanting to be around these two mentors that I just mentioned. In a direct, absolute idea on what methods would work, I not have that.
It's all right. Okay, so probably just shifting gears a little bit. And I think this is something that you've sort of mentioned. Like the two individuals that you mentioned kept pushing you, which is something that motivated you to stay in the field. Is there anything else? I know probably creating solutions that solve the challenges that we have right now could be a motivating factor, but is there anything else that maybe you'd like to tell us?
I think it's exactly what you've said.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't just begin on the stethoscope. There were so many other experiences that led to my interest growing for the field of biomedical engineering. But it was all built from tiny, tiny experiences. So I would find myself, say, in the lab. That was during the time I was a student. I would find myself in the lab looking at discrete components like transistors. I know you may not know
I have a vague idea from my physics classes. Very vague.
But... Oh, okay. Yeah. So I would look at things like resistors and just figure out how these things work. And from that, the interest just gradually grew until to the point where we started to engage in more serious people centered or more practical innovations and solutions. So it all just grew from that until this point.
All right. That's nice. And besides your work, besides changing the world in the way that you do, is there anything else that you enjoy doing that probably maybe keeps your mental health at check? I usually like to include this section because I believe the old, I don't know if it's a saying or a proverb or whatever it is that says, all work without play makes Jack a dull boy.
Like a dull boy.
Yeah.
That's true. That's really true. So like I said in my preamble, I said my interest mainly was in art. I love to draw. I love to sculpt. So whenever I've got like a free time, not doing any sort of work, I always find rest in artistic stuff. And so that is me going. I also love to read. The choice of books I will not disclose now, but that is like one of the other interests that I have. So it's art and drawing. Sometimes it works with watching some soccer, hanging out with friends and family. Yeah, that's what really keeps me busy when I'm not at work. It keeps the mental health at bay.
Okay, that's really nice. Yeah, I believe in finding hobbies outside your work, so that sometimes work can become very stressful and you just need something to take your mind off of it, or distractions. And sometimes they're not even distractions, they're just things that you like doing outside of work, which is good.
That's true.
Yeah. So two last questions. What is the most exciting development in biomedical engineering that you know of or that you think should be there?
I think the most impactful of developments I've seen so far is, number one, the miniaturization of medical devices. What really captivates me about biomedical engineering is being able to, you see, conceptualize, design, and ultimately manufacture medical devices that will someday provide a solution in the hospitals, will someday be used by a medical doctor to solve or to cure a patient or to treat a patient. So that really captivates me, how an engineer or a biomedical engineer is able to make a device as small as possible to even be able to fit into the body of a human being. That really captivates me. Another thing that I would really love to talk about is AI. Everything else that we have now is AI, you know. Yes, there are quite some issues. There's been low acceptance of artificial intelligence, especially in the field of healthcare. This, yes, is okay. It's okay for us to take it with a, if I can say, a pinch of salt. But ultimately, I feel like we'll have to accept that AI can be used for healthcare. So merging AI and medical devices, this is really what I feel will make an impactful development in the field of healthcare.
Yeah, I totally agree with the point of miniaturization of these devices. And I say that because in bioinformatics, we've truly benefited from the nanopore sequencing that's very, very small that you can carry to the field and do real-time sequencing. I agree with you on that. So as we come to a close on our conversation, I think one thing that I usually like to include is maybe any advice for someone who might like to walk in your footsteps. Is there anyone, okay, not even one, you can say as many as you deem important, but what are some of the lessons and advice that you'd give aspiring biomedical engineers or people in STEM generally who are just starting their journeys?
You see, our education tradition, if I may call it that, has forced us to believe that once you say write an exam, your script is marked. And if you find that you failed, you should align yourselves with failures. So we sort of have disparaged intelligence. We've limited intelligence to being able to pass an exam. And that's what really I feel has really affected many of the, especially Africans. What I would advise that African youth who would love to get into the field of biomedical engineering or would love to pursue a STEM-related career is that instead of being intelligent, try to be interested, because you realize that with interest, it's very easy to grasp as many concepts as you can. You just have to be interested and not intelligent, because we want to act as if, I don't know how I can explain this. If you sit down to explore an idea, to explore a concept, you sit down long enough to do that, you will be able to understand it better. And at the end of the day, when people see you doing some sort of intelligent work, they'll be able to tell to say this person is intelligent. The actual work that goes in forms because of interest and not intelligence. So to that youth who is trying to get into this field, I think my advice to them would be real and be interested. That's, for me, that is really what has worked. It's not so much being intelligent, but just being interested to pursue something and see the outcomes.
I think that's very well put. Don't need to be intelligent, you just need to be interested. I feel like I agree with that, because if you're interested, ultimately you'll try to find resources, information, you'll teach yourself. And as you said, yeah, at the end of it, you will be deemed intelligent because there's something that you're creating out of that. Thank you, Muyanga. I feel like we've had a very good conversation, and I think this is very important for people to hear relatable stories, for them to be informed on what a biomedical career might look like. And in case they want to pursue, there's a story here that they can listen to and make decisions for themselves. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for accepting our invite to come on the podcast.
Thank you very much, Laura, for having me. Thank you.
Yay, thanks. See you folks next time.